Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
Warning, this podcast discusses addiction, mental health, and other sensitive topics. Please listen with care and take a break if needed. You are not alone, and support is available.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Malfunction Junction.
Thank you for joining us.
This is Andrew.
This is Jay.
How's everybody doing today? Jay, how are you doing today?
Pretty damn good. It's been one of the better weeks I've had in quite a while.
Yeah?
Starting to stay on top of shit, be an adult. As regrettable as being an adult is, definitely not what I thought it would be.
Being an adult is not recommended. If there are any kids out there, which I hope there aren't.
Yeah, please don't listen to this.
I hope kids aren't listening to this program. But if there are, don't grow up. It's not that fun.
And if you're a parent, tell your kid, stop trying to be mature, go to Neverland, don't ever come back.
Exactly. But
for all the things considered that come with adulthood, this has been a more manageable week. Feels like it's starting to get a little easier. But how about yourself? Has it been a good week?
It's been an all right week. It's been kind of a hectic, like, school-wise week. I've just been buried.
Yeah,
it's the last. It's the last 2 weeks of school, and or whatever it is now. I think it's officially, like, this week and then next week, and then the week after that is finals week, and I don't have any finals.
Nice.
So, like, I'm fine.
Just pushing through the fucking grind.
Yeah, and then I'm done.
Attaboy.
Yeah, I can't wait. But yeah, so it's been just buried with that. And also, we'll get to it again in my clean but still a mess. I am definitely still a mess.
Yeah, that makes two of us, brother.
Yeah, I am still a mess, dude. I am not drinking or doing drugs anymore, but I am still a mess. And we will get to that later on in our segment later.
It's not even a segment. It's a saga at this point.
It is a saga.
It's just the tale of our lives unfolding.
Tale of our lives.
But we have fun, you know?
One story at a time. Mm-hmm. So we have a nice little topic for you guys today. We're going to be going into another listener question that we had asked from Patsy in Tucson again.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess, do you want to go right into that, or do you have anything else to say?
No, I got it.
Okay, well, let's go. We'll read the question. Is, can you explain the difference between enabling behavior and supportive behavior when it comes to addiction recovery? What are some clear signs that a loved one's actions are unintentionally sustaining the addiction rather than encouraging treatment?
Shout out to Patsy.
Yep.
Thanks for asking.
Yeah. There is a fine line between those two things. And I think you probably have a lot to say on this, too.
Quite a bit.
But you can go ahead and start on it if you'd like.
All right. So I want to first break up this conversation into two main ideas. The first is my personal view and personal experience with it. And that revolves more around the idea that this is individual dependent, that some behaviors that are enabling to one aren't effective towards another, and the same that are supportive are may not be effective for somebody else, and I think that's kind of a given. The other aspect of behavior is what any professional and person in the field is going to recommend you, which is that you have to treat it as a blanket statement. So even though my personal views in some ways contradict that, I'm still very understanding of that fact. Having dealt with family members in rehab and friends that went through recovery processes, and myself being in recovery and being the one kind of manipulating people to get the things I want, I'm aware of why they say you just kind of have to let people fail a little bit. That conversation I had with my family on, like, the Zoom call was one of the hardest things I've ever listened to, which is, like, they essentially tell you, stop arguing with them. You don't try and be supportive. Don't try and be loving. If they die, it's on them. You can't worry about that. But the more that you fight into this, the more their only hope is if you just kind of let them, like, you know, hang them out to dry.
Right.
And that is an incredibly difficult thing to do. And for me personally, like having an established relationship with certain people, there have been some friends I had that I knew just like they really just needed some level of support or stability, and they weren't as much of the manipulative type trying to take advantage of me. They weren't using me as an outlet. They just wanted somebody who could be there for them. And so for those people, that behavior of being around them and spending time with them and talking to them about their problems seemed to be quite effective for their drug usage. But for other people, that is like the kind of enabling behavior, and they would eventually try and spin that into asking for money or trying to get into excusing what they're doing and essentially take advantage of the kindness a little bit, or spend hours talking about, yeah, man, like, I know it's so bad, and thank you for holding me accountable, dude, and I know I'm going to get better.
And then never go through.
Right, and then do the same shit
the next day.
And so they'd hang out with me. They'd still, come spend the night at my house. They'd still ask me for money and rides, but they would never make that change, even though they'd constantly acknowledge it. And then eventually, I'd see it. So that's where, for me, I mean, I'm a little more comfortable playing the field on which route I take based on how I know the individual. But it's not something I can recommend to everyone. I understand, again, why they tell you, like, you just have to step away. I do believe heavily that it depends on the stage of addiction. If they're like, this is years in the making, they're on hard substances and, like, abusing things, and they're in and out of jail and so on and so forth, you're probably looking at a situation where you're more inclined to just step back entirely.
Yeah, and I think that has a lot to do. I mean, I don't know if I've talked about it on this particular show that about like my view on. I'm sure, and there's a bunch of other people that have had this view too, but like the view of life as like paths in the woods, kind of thing, where it's just like you're walking down a path in the woods and you come to a fork in the road, and that's where you're faced with a decision, and then one way you go is, often dependent on the rest of your decisions that you have to make. Because if you choose to go down a dark path, then, sometimes there's rarely light at the end of that, at the end of that tunnel.
It's easy to get lost.
It's easy to get lost in those woods and continue to make the wrong choice and continue to go down the wrong path. And so it's, when you're that far down that path, it's hard to get back.
Mm-hmm.
And, anybody that's listening to this show right now who is, I don't know what your stage is as of addiction is, but if you're in recovery or if you're seeking help or whatever, the fact that you've made it back to this point, if you are one that is, has sought help and has received help and has gotten through it, the fact that you've got on to the other side of that path and then gotten back to the light side of it, to where you're trying to make the right decisions and trying to do the right things and trying to go on to the right side of the path, that's a huge accomplishment.
It's commendable. It's very commendable.
I think that a lot of people don't really recognize that for themselves. I think other people do. People often, it's funny because like when I've brought up to the fact, like, oh yeah, I haven't drank in XYZ, however many, how long it's been, but I always am going, oh wow, good for you. And because I think that most people that are involved in the world of drugs and alcohol too, they recognize that, man, this is really bad for me. I think that a lot more people nowadays are recognizing that too, that this is all really bad for you. And I'm kind of now realizing that I'm getting off on a tangent. Whatever.
The nature of the podcast.
Yeah, I guess so.
I'm with you. I think that the main point of that people should focus on too is that, like, there are certain individuals that are inclined to find that way back, and for those that do, it is commendable. It's a very difficult thing, and especially for people that are really hard on themselves growing up or growing up around parents that are, they may not even recognize how much that takes just to get back to where you started. But there are the people that don't have that. And so to some of our listeners that maybe are witnessing somebody going through it, and they've been struggling watching somebody fail and not find their way back, and, they're not sure how to, that's kind of what we want to break down here. I pulled up a list of a few behaviors considered enabling, and I think one of the first things that I really learned while in the rehab process was that many of the behaviors that I viewed as normal, assisting, like loving behaviors are enabling to somebody who's in a deep state of addiction. And as somebody who's been on the backside, it definitely was, because I, you know, anytime somebody was super nice to me, I took advantage of that.
Well, I was actually talking about something about like this with someone earlier today that I was like, if you're not telling the truth to yourself, and that's what addiction is you're not telling the truth to yourself about that this substance is terrible for you, then you are not going to tell the truth to other people. And that's absolutely what that is when you're enabling there, and it's you're being taken advantage of. If you are allowing, you in those situations was at some level allowing yourself to be taken advantage of there by being what you thought was supportive, but in because of their addiction and because of their, it was enabling because they were just taking advantage of you.
Yeah, and it really doesn't seem that way. I mean, even with like friends I had with weight loss or when I was bulimic and I was doing this, and I had people that were trying to be as nice as possible, or like with my friends that were losing weight, and I, every time they'd say, hey man, I lost 5 pounds, like, dude, that's fucking awesome, you're fucking killing it, and then they'd turn around and gain 10, you know, and having that, it eventually took the kind of indifference of just going, all right, well, keep on it, good luck, you know, and letting it happen rather than trying to reward and gratify every single behavior that occurred. It was the only time that we were able to start seeing long-term progress. And it was the same for me, that anytime I got a little reward, it felt like I had done enough to take a break, you know. And it's the same with anyone who's, you know, in your personal life, if you're studying or trying to get shit done, if you take a break every 10 minutes and reward yourself, you know, by going on your phone for 20, you're probably going to end up spending, you know, way too much time on your phone. And that 10 minutes is going to become more and more difficult.
Well, and that was the issue with my friend Malik, who passed away a few years ago.
Rest in peace.
That he would get into a habit of rewarding himself. And it wouldn't be necessarily... He would grind. He would grind and get himself into, like, a good position. And he'd be like, oh, man, I think I deserve to... And it was just, like, every time end in a spiral. And then he'd bury him. He'd dig himself out. He'd, like, honestly, like, if there was a gold medal for digging yourself out of a ditch, like, at some point, of course, that was gonna... He was just gonna pass, because you can only dig yourself out of a ditch so many times with that. And
would he reward himself with like drugs? Yeah. Because I had a friend who did that. He'd be like, dude, I've been really good. I only took half a perk. I just, you know, I just wanted to have fun today. It's like, no, dude, you got to stay off the sauce.
You got to stay off it. That type of stuff, you got to stay off entirely. Mm-hmm. And it's really addictive things, you got to stay off entirely. And really anything, if it's something that has shown to have bad effects in your life, then you got to stay off it entirely. Because it's something, and especially if it's something that you really, really love, that you think that, you know, at one point in time you felt like you couldn't live life without it, you know, it's probably a problem if you couldn't live life without it at one point in time.
Right. You can't just dabble
with it.
Now, and one thing I think that's really important in the conversation of enabling behaviors, and I was thinking about this the other day, it's been a while, and I journaled about it a little bit too, is that, you know, I got this from listening to, like, a friend of mine who rapped in high school. We were from, like, a really nice privileged area, and he was doing this rap, and he
started, I know a few of those kids.
Yeah, and he was talking about how everybody doubted him, how all his family and friends said he'd never make it, and all this. And, like, I knew him. Like, that wasn't the case. It was people saying, hey, dude, like, you should focus on school. You're failing in high school. Like, you should focus on this. And so one of the things that I was thinking about is that the most critical people in your lives should be the people who love you the most. Those should be the people that are most concerned with your potential failure, because they want to see you do well in life. And when it comes to enabling behavior, you have to be super, super cognizant of the fact that it's easier to just be the loving, supportive side. And it's really difficult to be that super critical person. A lot of the behaviors listed as enabling are like, here, let's go through some of them.
Yeah.
Bailing them out, fixing legal or financial messes. So, you know, you see someone who's literally about to be homeless, and you're like, I don't want him to be homeless. I'm going to make sure he's okay. Avoiding conflict.
I wish I'd read that before a couple times in my life.
Right. Avoiding conflict. Staying silent to keep the peace. You don't want to be an asshole. You're, oh, they're in a fragile state. I don't want to argue with them. I don't want to ramp them up. And so you don't confront them.
Yeah.
And that's what, you know, interventions are. Giving money, same thing we were talking about earlier. Covering up, hiding the truth about their addiction. You don't want them to be embarrassed. And, like, if you get too much into that loving state, I saw my mom do this. I just want this person in my life, you know, this family member, to be happy. I don't want to keep seeing them go through this. And so it was constantly pampering. And never like, what the fuck are you doing?
How can I? Yeah, they're probably not uncomfortable, and that's just a mother's.
Right, exactly. And you have to be super careful that these behaviors that you go, I just love them. I want them to feel safe. I want them to feel loved, and you know they feel my compassion. Those are the behaviors that somebody in addiction, a lot of times, needs to go without a little bit to understand how much of a rift they've put between themselves and others.
Oh yeah, and I think that's something that, unfortunately, mothers especially, in my experience with my own mother and then also with mothers who I'm close with from the perspective of I'm friends with their sons. And
respectfully,
they've
called me, it's women in general most of the time, this highly emotional, caring, nurturing state.
True, but I find it especially with, I found it twice that I can think of really hardcore in my life where, one with my own mother, and then one with my aunt, who her son was going through addiction pretty hard as a young kid, a couple years below me, and she was like even blaming me for it because I had gone through it a few years prior. And then once I had come out of it, and like he had come out of it too, she begged for my forgiveness, and it was just like, because she was just like, you know, she was ashamed that. She realized what it was, that it wasn't like my choice really at that time to be doing anything, and it was all, you know, her son's choice or not choice or whatever to go down that path as well. And that was one of the things that made me go later on, you know, do not follow me type thing,
right?
But it's just like I've kind of gotten back on that side where it's like I do kind of make decisions that are for the best sometimes, but I don't necessarily make always good decisions. So it's just pretty much like don't make my exact moves.
Right, do as I say, not as I do.
Right, exactly. Or I don't even say do as I say. It's right. Just kind of like I don't know what I'm talking about. I think that's something we should stress on this program, is that we don't know what we're talking about.
No, we're young and still trying to figure out the path.
Yeah, we mainly made this podcast to help everyone, including ourselves.
Have a reason to hang out.
And have a reason to hang out. Yeah.
Talk
and,
shit.
Yeah. And, it's just speaking from experience there, it's just there's a tough side of it, of like the enabling side. It's a tight rope.
Because you fall off the other end and you're super critical. And this was always my fear, and I've seen this happen. I mean, it's the hardest part about being in that, watching someone go through addiction. But, you know, I took the route of, I'm done helping you, go fuck yourself, was a little abrasive, and then watched a friend die, you know, and got the news months later and was like,
yep, what I the know fuck happened? Exactly how that feels.
And it's hard because, you know, I had tried the being too loving and too supportive route for so long, and like, you know, the time he told me he had done a Percocet, he looked like he was 11 years old. Like, when he told me. Like, he was kind of shaky, and I was like, what's going on?
Like, he was hiding something from his dad.
I was like, yes, exactly. And so I was like, what's wrong with you,
dog? I'm not your dad, dude.
Uh-huh. And he goes, well, I don't want you to be mad. Please, I don't want you to be mad at me. And I was like, dude, I'm not going to be mad at you. I love you, bro. And he's like, I did a little Percocet. And I was like, come on. I'm not going to be mad at you. I just want you to be better. But I was in that state of, I don't want you to run from me. I want to be someone that you can trust and, like, find support in.
Yeah.
But then also, again, like, that behavior just became, because I didn't, you know, chew him out and I wasn't like, all right, we're going to fix this. That was when he started the spiral again. And so one of the things I think that, you know, we kind of touched on this already, but when it comes to enabling behavior, the biggest red flag for it is not how loving or how angry you feel. It's what the response is in the individual. And you can be going mm-hmm. the best route you think is possible. And if it's not making a difference in their addiction, mm-hmm. you need to either reevaluate or step way the fuck back and let them deal with it. It's a really hard process to go through, you know, because you of yeah. course you want to be there for them. But
and like my parents did that before me at some point with my addiction. They eventually were like at some point where they were just like, we can't really help you. Mm-hmm. And like you they almost got to the point where they were going to tell me to stop calling. Because they were just like, it was just like every time I would call, I was either asking for money or I was just like wasted. Mm-hmm. And like they just couldn't do it anymore. Mm-hmm. And I get it. And at the time I didn't get it. At the time I was really mad. But now I like, course, now right? I like 100%. Now I like 100% understand. And also like to go a little bit into my own story with the same type of thing you're doing with I one time pretty probably about maybe it's, but within 6 months before I left Austin.
Mm-hmm. Just give us your age at that time.
Oh,
how many years ago?
25.
Okay.
Yeah. So yeah, I was 25.
Heard.
When I like before it happened, before I left, and before Malik died after I had moved out here, mm-hmm. and I found him in his car knotted out, and like he wasn't like overdosed or nothing, but he was just like, you know, passed out, and it was in the parking lot of my apartment complex, yeah, yeah. And he was just like knotted out in his car, and I was just like. And I didn't do anything. I, like, didn't even tell him that I saw him. I just, like, went up to his car, and I saw him, like, and I just, like, walked away. And I was just, like, and I, like, later on regretted that. Mm-hmm. Because I was, like, and not, like, I later on regretted it after he died. Because I was, like, I think the reason that I didn't do anything at the time was not to, I think at that point, it was kind of beyond help. Because there had been a couple of times where I'd been, like, oh yeah, like I did some heroin or like whatever, like or like
were
we
still
did
using it.
It
this time.
Me no, me okay. I was not using it at this point, not heroin at least. I had gotten really lost in ketamine at this point in time, and I was using a lot of cocaine.
Was there any of the mindset of like don't want to be a hypocrite of like, well, I'm still on shit. Like
that was a lot of it.
Yeah, because I had that like, when I was drinking a fuck ton. Yeah. I was watching other people do it, and I was like, well, who am I to judge?
Yeah,
and
that was
that's
a lot
to
of
each
it.
Their own mentality. I mean, that's a fucking killer dog.
Yeah, and you know, it's like it really should be. I mean, if you're someone that has friends that you can trust and that you know you guys hold each other accountable type thing, then. You know, or at least you have friends that you can tell about your problems, that you have someone to hopefully keep you accountable. The best thing you can do to keep your friends accountable there is to actually, when they say like, hey, this is something like for me, like if and with you, like if I was like, yeah, like, you know, for me that I don't drink, I don't drink alcohol. And if I started drinking alcohol, I would hope that you would be like, yo, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah.
But maybe with like, but you know, you do know I smoke weed, but that you wouldn't be like, oh yeah, that's fucked up, dude. You're ruining your sobriety, because that would be wrong for your sobriety. Mm-hmm. That's not the way this should work for people.
No, no. I want to say I've done this decently well, where like, I definitely had multiple conversations with you in the past about weed and stuff to make sure that, you know, it was right for you, and you explained to me a couple times why it was so beneficial for your life. And so, you know, it's something I try and keep in the forefront of my mind when I'm talking to people. And if I meet someone who's like, yeah, I do this all the time, but it's fine. Almost every person I know who, like, regularly smokes or still drinks or whatever, I'm like, what does it do for you? You know, like, why do you have, you know, what do you get from it? And I've had many a conversation with friends of mine, especially when I was still in Florida, after I stopped smoking, where I'm like, yo, this wasn't good for me. I'm not saying you can't do it, but you can't tell me a single positive thing it does for you. Why do you keep doing
this?
I know,
for real. There's a lot of people that just like, yeah. Oh, I love weed.
And they just don't want to be sober and deal with it. And I get it. I did it for a long time. But that conversation of kind of, you know, always being a little extra cautious, not trying to be judgmental, not telling people, hey, you can't do that, But going up to my friends and just saying, hey, man, like, you have, this is a pretty habitual thing for you. Why are you doing it? You know? And, like, I have my habitual routines with, you know, whether it's fucking caffeine or where I hang out or whatever it may be. And I try and always acknowledge when talking to people that I have a problem with my behaviors. That, like, I still use nicotine way too often and I drink too much, you know, caffeine every single day. And so I try and acknowledge my behaviors so that when I have conversations with friends, it doesn't feel judgmental. But that I know that they're doing something that's good for them. And if it's not, then we dive into that conversation. So, you know, sometimes broaching the line between enabling and supportive is just being able to talk about it and really getting to the bottom of, hey, man, what's going on here? Why are you doing this? And then picking a route from there. And kind of, if you need to, sometimes you got to put pressure on it, which I did with friends of mine in Florida. I did that with my cousin. I was like, yo, bro, what the fuck are you doing? And then he went into rehab, and we had a long conversation about it. And then he started hanging around, and I was like, don't start doing this shit again. You're going to fucking slip back. You don't have the self-control for this. And I had to be a little bit of a dickhead with him because anytime I was like, all right, man, if that's what you want to do, I mean, I'm not going to step on your toes or whatever. And then I'd watch him spiral again and do the same shit all over again.
Yeah, and
you got to be an asshole.
And I think that there's another side of, like, with there's such a thing as co-signing someone's bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
And recently I had an issue with, like, an issue where this arose in my life where someone, I won't say any names or anybody or who this relationship was to me, but I'll just say a friend came to me because they were struggling with alcohol issues, and it's known, you know, it's from back home, but they came to me because they were struggling with alcohol issues, and they, like, gave me, like, this whole long list of, like, oh, I'm just, like, I'm only having this much, but it's, like, I don't know if I'm having enough to go to rehab, but, like, I start school in, like, 4 days, and, but I'm, like, and I was, like, and I don't know if I can do detox and just go and do detox and go for 4 days, and, like, and I think I can get it done in just 4 days, and I was just, like, I literally sent to them back, and I was just, like, yo, if you're thinking about, if you're thinking to the point with alcohol that you need to go to rehab,
it's even in the possibility.
Then school can wait, dude.
Yeah.
Then school can wait. You need to go get healthy. But if you are asking me, if you're trying to have me co-sign your bullshit, I am not going to do that.
Right.
And I would, like, set a hard boundary. And they have not responded back to me.
No, and that's, like, you one know? Of the things and they've been having empathy, issues. Right?
Like, I don't want to go into who this person is to me, but they've been having issues with another person in my life too, mm-hmm. because of that, who they're in a very tight spot with, we'll say. It's just causing issues, and it's just like, yeah, like in their issue in particular comes from, in my opinion, trauma, as most of ours do. And, like,
right, the vast majority
of people, and that's from
like
the co-signing
the bullshit. Sometimes it feels like empathy, right? Where you're like, right. Oh, dude, I just have been struggling with this, and I don't know, ever since I've been single and, like, just going on, you're like, dude, I totally get you. And in the process, you're kind of affirming that their life is hard enough to justify an outlet that's unhealthy. And you don't think you're doing absolutely. That, but in their mind, they're like, yeah, it is. It does suck, right? And kind of commiseration, you know, it's a brutal route to go down at times.
Well, and, like, yeah, I remember just from when I was in active addiction, and when someone would be like, and I'd be like, oh, man, I don't know, I'm feeling so shitty, and I, like, my body always hurts, and that's why I, like, do this, and, like, and it's like, okay, maybe your body always hurts because you fucking 215 pounds because you've been drinking beer all day. By the way, for anybody out there that's heavier than that, it's fine. I'm not very tall, so I shouldn't be, I should not be that heavy.
Yeah, where my boys pushing 3 bills at? Are we out here?
Yeah. Jay, on the other hand.
Yeah. I'm six fucking two, dude. I get to be fat. Spread out. Yeah, I got the Shane Gillis build up.
Yeah. Sick. I forgot what I was even talking about. What was I saying?
Co-signing bullshit. Yeah, just like, in that. It's funny, though, when you were explaining that, your voice for the active addiction is the same voice I have for me, like the, oh, dude, I just need to go fucking smoke a joint.
Yeah, I know.
I think about it the same way you do. Yeah. That, like, kind of whiny moby, like, I don't know, dude. I'm fucking, I'm tired. It's so hard in life being an adult and like our society. Shut the
dude,
fuck
I
up.
I swear to God, I wouldn't smoke weed if it wasn't for fucking society.
Dude, it's just like the price society of, I'm never going to buy a home, dude. Like, yo, yeah, it sucks. Get over it. You got to be a functional adult, smoking weed and fucking drinking and doing whatever else fuck you're doing that's keeping you, you know, stagnant is not going to get you any closer.
Definitely not.
But yeah, and that's another thing too, that if you are in those, yeah, if you're one of those people that goes in and out of active addiction cycles, if you're one of our listeners that's still struggling, I think one of the best things that you can possibly do when you're in the better, you know, cycles of your life is to try to acknowledge what behaviors you seek out when you're looking for enabling people, and then have those conversations before you get to that. Because I did that a lot, and when I started to kind of slip back in, I had family that understood me. And like my little brother, when he called me or when we'd talk, I go away to college and fucking start doing the same shit again. I had already had conversations with him. I'm like, yeah, this is what I do. And I kind of lie and bullshit my way out of it. And so when I would go back into those cycles and talk to him, he'd immediately call me out and he'd be like, bro, you're doing it again. He's like, we talked about this already. You fucking know what you're doing.
Yeah.
And that really saved me a lot of times from slipping back in.
That's really lucky, because a lot of people, like, don't have a good enough relationship with their siblings for them to even, like,
I understand that, too. That's my sister and I. Yeah.
I have a great relationship with my sister now, but we didn't have the best growing up, so she had and she was also a few years younger than me, so I wouldn't have taken her advice anyway.
Yeah.
And, at that point in my life, I wouldn't have taken her advice just based on being a few years younger than me and being my sister.
Yeah, that's the same situation I was in. Yeah. She was younger and she was a female, and I was like, yeah, you ain't telling me shit. But now I'm in the position of being on the other end of it and watching her go through the same cycles with alcohol and behavioral issues and codependent relationships.
Sure.
And, yeah, dude, it's one of the hardest things I've ever done. And it's really hard for me too, because I don't know how to have that relationship without being overly dickheadish about it, with kind of being like, at least based on what you talked about, it sounds more like your aunt, of just being fucking super abrasive and kind of blaming her all the time, and she doesn't respond to that, and being too compassionate. Yeah. Every time I try and be super empathetic and be a big brother and be like, listen, I love you, I just want you to be happy, and da 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 da, she just doesn't listen to shit and she doesn't change her behavior. No. So I've had to kind of keep a distance. We don't really talk anymore. Liz, if you ever listen to this, I love you. Call me. Come out to fucking Denver. Mm-hmm. Get away from the fucking weirdos you got back at home. You know what I'm talking about?
I second that. Yeah. Just based on what I am aware of.
Mm-hmm. You can come hang out with us.
Yeah. We'll go climb a mountain or something.
Mm-hmm.
Stay away from alcohol and
certain people.
Shitty people. That's funny. All right, we got anything else for that topic?
That's about all I got. The one thing I'll always recommend in conversations like this is, if you are in the process of going through it, find a fucking professional. Find somebody who's third party, who doesn't have a vested emotional situation, and is able to think more clearly than you are. Because one of the big things about enabling that we keep touching on is that you might not know it's enabling. You might think you're being a good person. You may not think you're co-signing their bullshit. But if you go find somebody who doesn't have a you know, fucking card or like a hand in play, you know, they may have a little bit better sight than you do. So find somebody else.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I guess we'll move on a little bit to our next segment here. Are we going to do the your game segment that you had?
We're not going to do it this week, but I'll kind of explain what my thoughts are on this.
Okay, cool.
So moving forward, just because we both have such an affinity for the comedic aspects of podcasts.
Laughing.
Yeah, for making fun of all this bullshit. Did you play the fucking sound? Shout out to our new fucking soundboard.
Hell yeah. We got, for everybody, the listeners out there, we got new microphones. I hope it sounds good.
Hell yeah. But yeah, so I would like to start introducing a new game segment each week. We'll make up some crazy shit and just have a few little mini games every week. What that will entail, I don't want to give away anything, but it'll just be super over the top, kind of extravagant.
It'll be fine dining at its best.
Yeah, it'll be something along those lines. oh, fuck. fuck out of people. There's nobody who takes this serious. No,
definitely not.
But yeah, so we'll see what comes in the next few weeks. Also, speaking of, you know, fun games and shit, we're still looking for more applicants for Trauma Battle.
So far, we have two that that have reached out to me that have said that they would be interested in competing in Trauma Battle.
And now we've got more mics, so
and now we have more mics. You. We're ready for this. We are ready for Trauma Battle, and we hope you are too.
If we can just get at least four more, ideally six, but if we can get four more on top of the two we have, we'll have eight, and we can do a Trauma Battle bracket. We can have an official season and playoffs.
Yeah, okay, and then I think that there's a way to do that. There's a way to do, like...
For playoffs, we might have to randomize your traumas, and, you know what I mean? We'll figure something out there, but, you know, in the meantime, we'll bring
you in. We may have to do, like, a top... We may have to do, like, a top 10. You bring your top 10 traumas, and then you get... You get two, and you play them in each round, because that way, it's like... Because if you had to play all five,
double thing.
If you had to play all five, we're playing the same traumas every time.
That's what I'm saying. So like either we'll randomize it a little bit, or we'll add daily doubles, or change something about power plays. We'll figure something out for playoffs. But get a few more people in here, we'll get a little bracket going. So
we will have a bracket, a Trauma Battle bracket. It'll be great. It'll be like March Madness, but with people's traumas.
Yes. So, moving on from that, we are on to our clean but still a mess. Clean but still a mess segment.
I'm going to have you start off on this one because mine is pretty brutal. Well, brutal is the wrong word, but you know what I mean.
Oh, fine, I'll kick it off. All right, so I was trying to think of a bunch of... there's been a few things this week. I've had, like, very real struggles I'm going through with adulting stuff that I've talked about a little bit before. I've had some, like... you know, financial concerns and, like, insurance coverages. Potentially, worst of all, I bought a bucket hat.
That is the worst of it.
I went to the thrift store and I went, fuck it, dude, it's ridiculous enough. But I think the one I'm going to use this week is that in the past week, I think I've gotten into a record high level of internet arguments. Constantly.
On what?
Dude, on like three platforms. I'm getting comments every day from people arguing with me about shit. It's everything, like, on Instagram, YouTube, TikTok, and all of them are about... Oh, and Twitter. All of them about different shit. Some are about which MMA fighter is better. I got into an argument with some lady about shark attacks in Australia. I used some choice words, but I was like... She was like, oh, it's... You know, Australia is uniquely dangerous. And I was like, shut the fuck up. Like, Florida's worse than Australia, and it's like... 1/12 the coastline. There's 20 shark attacks a year. There's 500 million visits to the beach. You're fine. And she was like, no, it's the period of time. And I was like, you fucking dumb bitch, shut up. I was just losing it. I was like, you don't know what the fuck you're talking about. I just kept pasting stats at her. Yeah. And she just kept skipping it and arguing with me.
Yeah.
We got into that.
That's online arguments in a nutshell for you.
Yeah. I got on YouTube. I got gotten a couple arguments with some conservatives about immigration, and then I got in a couple arguments with some liberals about some other issues which probably aren't the best to bring up on the podcast, but it's been a mix. We're keeping it balanced at the bare minimum, but
you gotta stay balanced. We're out here in the middle.
And I started saying, like, a couple weeks ago, I was like, you know, I don't comment enough on things. Like, if I'm gonna use social media, I want to at least have interactions with people. And for a background,
mistake.
For background, when I was in high school and college, like between the ages of like 17 and probably 21, my Instagram every day used to be, almost every day, used to be things like polls and question responses. And I just put up a bunch of different articles I saw, weird clips, try and keep it balanced. And so my inbox was constantly filled with people sending me like new articles.
Dick pics.
Not those, sadly. But yeah, so you play this out. So yeah, I mean, I was 17. Play the other sound, Doug. Sweet. So yeah, you know, I felt like it was a much more productive time in my life. because I was getting so much different insight and I was, you know, gaining a lot of knowledge. And so I was like, let me do that again. And instead, I just ended up with arguing with dickheads.
The internet's changed since you were in high school.
It's been a few years, man. And like, yeah, I've also changed, I guess, because I don't have patience anymore when it comes to those conversations. I used to not know enough that I would never be upset. And now I'm just like, no, you're wrong. Shut the fuck up.
Yeah. And then also, like, the average person on the internet is
dead internet. It's like,
it is now everybody. Yeah. It's a bot. And it's also like, most people, I swear to God, most people do have accounts, but are very inactive on them.
Brother, the one I got the most mad about was somebody calling me a bot, actually.
That's awesome.
It was a really dumb joke on a comedy podcast. And I commented, somebody please explain this. And somebody replied and said, fuck off, bot. No, we will not explain this to AI. Leave us alone. And I was like, fuck you, dude. It's a dumb joke.
That's awesome. So that's the best.
It was such a bad joke. The joke was something like, you know, a guy goes to a comedy show and this girl shows up and is like super hot and is like, I was at your comedy show earlier. I want to fuck you. And then he responds, was it the first or the second show? And I was like, I don't get it. What's the joke? And people were like, oh, it's because comedians care more about the quality of their set than like getting laid. And I was like, that's retarded. How was I going to understand that? Like, it just didn't make any fucking sense to me.
Well, and also, that's not funny.
It's not funny.
That's not funny.
No. And so I was like, where do I laugh? I don't get it. And then I got a bunch of fucking wannabe goddamn Shane Gillis and Anthony Jeselnik's on the internet making fun of me in the comments.
Which comedian was this?
I don't fucking know. I got like 22 comments on that. It was literally just, I got like two people that were like, yeah, dude, I get you. And then the other 20 were like, no, you fucking idiot. I was so pissed, bro.
Damn, so mad. No, I'd be mad too. Especially because the people, I listen to comedy podcasts. I love comedy podcasts. Comedy podcast listener comments are some of the most brain dead.
The worst is the fucking people who try and make it like it's this like super intellectualized version of what it really is. And it's like, it was a fucking joke about farting. You don't have to be like, oh, dude, if you think about it, it really comments on like the nature of male female interaction. It's like, no, it's about crop dusting your wife. It's not, it's that easy. It's a stupid, funny joke. But some fucking, you know, 20-year-old retard. Oh, am I allowed to say that? Yeah,
dude,
butterfly.
That comedian wrote that down because it made him giggle. And now you are commenting about how it's funny. Yeah. You're a joke critic?
Yeah,
That's the least. Like food critic was pretty low, but you at least get to eat food for free. But like, if
the
you're
worst
a joke critic,
critics, oh my
god. Well,
that's, I had those friends. Holy fuck.
Holy shit, dude.
You comedy critics can go in the same boat.
Same boat fucking, as Broadway critics, yes.
Yeah. Oh, dude, like,
the way she danced wasn't appealing to me. The way she sang is bad.
I'm going to be honest here. I'm going to let this fly.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to let it fly. The worst. I don't know why. I don't know if it's some source of pride. But, dog, the brothers under Cat Williams videos that try and insist he is, like, the fucking second Messiah drive me up a wall. And I love Cat Williams. He is a top three funniest person of all time to me. He's fantastic. But, like, watching someone be like, Cat gets it. He understands the background of Hollywood, and he knows all the rituals and shit.
Yeah.
It's like, no, dude, he made a joke about smoking weed with white people. It's funny. Let it be funny, dude. Like, he's a fucking comedian.
Real.
It's like, comedians are the forefront of truth in our society. It's like, okay. No.
Well,
but we're letting it go.
Sure. I mean, they maybe point out things that are ways to look at things differently, but, like, at the same time, forefront of truth, they are literally just trying to make you laugh.
Yes, exactly.
Joe Rogan says this a million times on the podcast, fucking laughter is the currency here.
Mm-hmm.
It's like it's like they're just trying to make each other laugh so that then the other comedians will think that they're funny.
And both of us love the Carlins and the fucking,
yeah, sure,
and some of the Cat Williams bits, and Shane Gillis has some great political bits. And there are levels to comedy, and there's,
absolutely,
you know, hidden meanings and stuff. But if you need to fucking point it out to the rest of the world, you might as well go fucking take a long walk off a short pier. I couldn't give a fuck about your opinion.
For real.
For the people that don't get it, they don't get it. If you get it, you don't need to tell everybody you got it. Shut the fuck up.
No, absolutely.
Moving on from that, I'm going to have to walk back my online commenting.
Yeah, you might want to
do that. Why don't you tell us what you got?
I'm going to have to walk back my behavior. in the parking lot around here. I see you getting ready to do this. So I'm going to start off the full story. I'm going to tell the full story. Uh-huh. Give the listeners their chance to decide who's right and who's wrong in this scenario. So there was a guy in my parking lot. And for the listeners also, my parking lot for where I live in the garage here is in the garage of my apartment building, I should point out.
Parking garage, yeah.
Yes, parking garage. I live in the basement area. It's a very tight spot. There is not very many parking spots mm-hmm. down here. And so when some dickhead contractor pulls up and takes up three parked diagonally.
Three?
Three.
Oh, you didn't mention that.
This guy was parked diagonally over three spots. And so I saw this and I came over and I walked out to go get into my car and leave. And I was like, if this guy's still back, like maybe he's just like in a hurry and he just pulled up and then he'll be gone in a sec. When I get back, he'll be gone. I told myself that. And so I was actually pretty proud of myself though. I was like, okay, like good job. You didn't do this what you did next right away. So I come back like 3 hours later and his car is exactly in the same fucking scenario. And actually it's a little different. It originally had a paint bucket on top of it and now the paint bucket was gone. So what that told me is this guy is aware that he is parked like this.
Yeah.
And I was just like, fuck this guy. So I go back inside. And I was like, what do I have? And I was thinking, like, what can I do? I could key his car. I could fucking slash his tires. I could do all these things. And I was like, that's all a little bit extreme.
Yeah.
So I went into my fridge and found the nastiest, stinkiest egg that I could find. And I hucked it at his car.
Where's the button?
Yeah, it's A. Yeah. Yeah, I hucked it at his car. And then, funny enough, he left a note in the on a piece of wood inside of the garage.
Was it in Spanish? Hey, amigo, no está cómico.
No. It was a white guy. And he said, throw an egg at my truck again and I'll fuck you up.
Yeah,
I'm
that's
waiting.
A white guy.
I'm waiting, it said on it.
I see red.
I see red. I just go insane. I black out and I kill everybody.
You're gonna fuck with me, dude. I've been working with my hands for 27 years. I've been blue collar my whole life, dude. I own a fucking AR. It's 22, but it's an AR.
So, first off, this is how this is gonna go if this guy ever figures out that it was me that threw an egg at his truck. He's gonna come knock on my door. I'm gonna go, oh, it's you. I'm gonna shut the door in his face. He's gonna pull his hand open and keep the door open. And that's when he finds out that I keep a sword right next to my door.
Or, your fucking German dog is gonna come bite his goddamn dick off.
That could happen too.
Yeah.
That could happen too. I have a big white German dog.
Yeah, you. Get out of the house!
Actually, she's not even just a German dog. She's a German and Rhodesian dog, which means her breed was trained to fight lions. Like, take down and hunt lions.
I don't know how they do the Rhodesian accent.
It's African, so don't try.
I think it's South African, isn't it?
I don't know about that. I think it might be, but I have no idea.
I feel like it's based
I'm being
on
honest,
Dutch,
I have
like
no
Afrikaans.
Idea. Maybe.
I'm going to get your dog and rip it off your balls.
Yes, yes.
I think it's half decent.
Yes.
That fucking Americans accent is brutal. Real Dutch is the ugliest accent in the goddamn world. I found that out recently.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. But yeah, so that's what happened to me this week.
I don't feel especially
good about it, but at the same time, I'm not the type of person to harbor regrets.
Yeah. The note makes it better.
The note makes it so much funnier.
If the note
dude.
Was something kind of sad, like, hey, man, that was really uncool. Like, I was working really hard. I'd be like, ah.
But he wouldn't.
Exactly
don't park like a dickhead.
Thought it was. It
don't
was the dickhead.
Park
like
a dickhead.
Yeah, this entitled fucking jackass. So
yeah, hey, he's just this entitled fucking jackass. And honest to God, if he's out there again at any given time, if he's parked normal, I'll leave his car alone. But if he's parked like a dickhead again, I am 100% chance egging his car again.
Watch for cameras though.
There are no cameras.
No, I know if he sets one up.
Oh, that's fine. I don't care. I'll wear a mask. I got a shiesty.
Atta boy.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. But, yeah, so that was essentially the clean but still a mess. We are very clearly still a mess.
Mm-hmm. So is that dude's car?
No, I watched him clean it up. It was funny enough. It was extremely funny. I went outside to go get my mail, and I saw him like on top of his car cleaning it up, and I was just like laughing my ass off going up there because I was just like, "Fuck you, dude! Oh, you stupid fucking asshole! Don't park like that."
Get on his side, dude.
Like, oh, that would have been funny.
What the fuck happened? Some asshole dude's probably one of these fucking liberals, huh? Watch him get all fucking.
Bro, that would have been so funny. Just record it.
Yeah, dude, it's fucking goddamn Denver liberals. These libtards are fucking. They can't handle a real man.
Yeah, for real.
Go get it again. Put a banana in his exhaust pipe. Got his ass again, dog.
A banana with a condom on it. So
yeah.
He's like, God damn it, these people.
Oh my God. Just go out there and start slapping Kamala stickers on his truck, dude. He'd love it.
Bro. I don't have any of those.
And
obviously.
Stickers, not car magnets. Something that he's going to have to scrape off with a fucking buddy knife.
Oh, that'd be so funny, dude.
Oh, that'd be great.
That sounds
I'm
like
sure
the
we can find some pretty
fucking
easily.
That sounds like the best fucking move, dude. To just like. Yeah, I'm not gonna say that. I'll say that later. But that would be literally the best fucking move ever to slap a Kamala sticker on the back of his.
Oh, that'd be great.
Just very clearly because he's obviously like very not for that.
Oh yeah,
yeah, that'd be so funny.
It's like calling a frat bro the F word. It's like if you call you call a feminine man the F word, that's not cool. Like you're just
no,
a bully.
That's
and
a bully
you're
thing.
Kind of a bigot, to be honest.
Yeah, yeah.
But
I
calling
agree
a frat boy that and watching, I don't suck dick. You know, like
that's the funniest
that's
thing
hilarious
ever. That's the funniest mm-hmm thing ever.
Yep.
Yeah, that's pretty much. We're still a mess, but yeah, anyway. Yep.
Boom.
So we're gonna go into our last segment here, our song of the week here, and we will. I think we're running pretty good on time here, so we'll actually probably get out of here about 10 minutes early.
Mm-hmm.
I will start off with my song of the week, though. Mine is a song called Don't Ask by John Craigie, is the guy's name. I recently was introduced to this guy by one of our friends at the cover bar named Paul. You know Paul? Shout out Paul.
Do I know Paul?
I believe you know Paul.
I don't think I know Paul.
He is a daytime
morning
person.
Guy?
So, yeah.
Yeah. I'm a fucking creature of the night, bro.
Yeah, fair enough. No, Paul's cool though. Yeah, and he told me about John Craigie, mm-hmm, and I've been jamming to this song, dude. The lyrics is, I mean, there's no part of it that says don't ask. I don't know why it's called that, but it's there's quite a bit of like, The main like hook part of this, or the main like, you know, lyric part of the song is I ain't old, baby, I'm brand new, and it's like I love that line.
Love
but
it.
It's like it's there's a bunch of good stuff in it where it comes from talking to like just some woman there that, you know, that's like probably not as attractive as he wants her to be, because it says don't ask if I've been lonely, baby, you know I've been lonely. If I wasn't lonely, I wouldn't be talking to you.
That's such a dick line.
Such a fucking good line, dude. Yeah. And
is this like country? Is it more in line with like Billy Strings or what is it?
It's like country music, yeah.
Got it,
it's like, it's kind of like, yeah, some folksy country acoustic music type
heard
stuff,
that.
Yeah. It's Billy's like kind of zone thing with the bluegrass because he's just so fast. He's just like, and then there's some other players that definitely play as fast, but they, you know, like, that's like its own style is fast bluegrass, like just the picking, real quick picking.
Mm-hmm. It's bluegrass. It's not bluegrass. It's methamphetamine.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, back in the day. That's what I got. John Craigie. Everybody go listen to it. It's a...
Nice. I'll check that out. I've been listening
to a
lot
fucking
of that
jam
music lately.
Hell yeah.
My song this week is Call Your Mom by Noah Kahan. A song that I listened to forever ago, and for some reason it was one of those songs that at the time I didn't have any interest in. It was too slow. And I've been listening to it back, and it's fucking amazing.
Yeah, my girlfriend recently introduced me to him.
Yeah, he's fantastic.
He's a really good songwriter. Mm-hmm. I agree with you on the slow part. It's not my style, mm-hmm. really, particularly. Yeah. But
most of his music is the stuff I respect, but I listen to.
Right, exactly. That's kind of how I felt about it. I was like, this isn't something that I would like necessarily listen to all the time, but this guy's a really talented mm-hmm. songwriter.
But funnily enough, I've been slowly getting more into him and just kind of putting it on in the background, which is what I find it good for. But I talked to my brother the other day. We caught up for a while, and he mentioned that he was listening to him lately. And I was like, what song are you listening to? And he told me the song. I think it's, hold on, I can tell you in like 3 seconds. It was Growing Sideways.
Okay.
And my brother said, oh, yeah, dude, I've been listening to the song. And I was like, no shit. And I sent him a screenshot. It was the last song I had downloaded.
Nice, I've been listening to
lately. But Call Your Mom is essentially like, it's about having a friend that's like suicidal.
Right, and it's
like, I'll call your mom. Like, I'll drive over. I'll be there for you. And then, you know, there's a couple lines in the song, like, I don't want to drive a mile wondering if you're still breathing. Like, you know, and I'll keep calling and I'll show up for you. And, yeah. It's a very powerful song. It's really good. Something that I, like, can say I'm very lucky to have had people like that in my life and been lucky enough to be in a position to return the favor, which may feel like a weird way to phrase it, but I feel like a lot of those like kind of traumatic events where you have to step up are character defining moments. And as much as I wish I didn't have such a multitude of people in my life who was like on the verge of, you know, going over the edge and pulling the trigger, I'm very grateful for the opportunity to have been able to step up and learn a little bit more about myself and have that bond with them. And I'm very, very grateful for the people who did the same for me. That song is awesome.
Same here as well.
Mm-hmm.
Been a few of those friends for me.
It's a little slow, but I'm telling you, especially the last like minute and a half, 2 minutes where it picks up, fantastic, very good writing. And for those struggling with depression, I think it's a very powerfully positive song. It's all about the, you know, interconnection of friendship, and, you know, I would strongly suggest it to you.
Oh, that's awesome. Sounds like a good song.
Now, one thing, now that we're past that I'd like to bring up that you pointed out to me is we've got some new listeners, and I think
it's
about time that we start going back to what we did the first episode and shout out our listeners all over the fucking place. Because we got some cool ones.
We do have some cool listeners lately.
Andrew, you want to tell people where we got listeners?
We lately have a listener from Africa.
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 Why are you gay?
What? Are you gay?
You are gay.
You are gay.
You are an alcoholic. Okay, that's enough. All right.
Okay, sorry about that. Shout out to our listeners in Ghana. If you are really out there, you could have been just hacking our RSS feed. We're not sure.
It's either that. You could use a VPN. We don't know. But
we don't know what's going on. But shout out.
We appreciate it very much.
Shout out. Especially all those in America.
Yeah, and we got listeners in Colorado now.
Colorado.
Arizona.
Colorado.
California.
Shout out to my homies back home.
Florida. Shout out to boys.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got quite a few different areas besides that too. So we'll start shouting you guys out when we see you.
Yeah, when we see you guys.
Appreciate you tapping
on the RSS feed. We will send you a picture of your house.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, Jesus Christ. Nice.
Yeah, jokes. Jokes.
Cool, but that's
jokes. Okay, cool. Well, that's really all I got too. I guess the last thing to say is go out there and follow the Instagram. That's Malfunction Junction Podcast on Instagram. We also are on, you can email us your questions.
Always email us your fucking questions.
Yes.
If you're listening to this part of the podcast and you hear us and you don't do it, dude, we're going to be so mad. And fucking Andrew's got eggs and a goddamn arm on him. So don't be the next on the list. If you hear this, just send us an email with a basic question about shit you've been through and shit you're curious about and give us more reasons to talk for no reason, okay?
Yeah, it's great. Yeah. And where can that email is malfunctionjunctionpodcast@gmail.com. And what was that?
Applause button.
Applause.
Yeah, we're retarded. Let us see that. There we go. Yep. Malfunctionjunctionpodcast@gmail.com.
It's laughter. So it's close enough.
Right, so that'll work.
But yeah, so and last thing I will mention also is that I think this is the first time you're hearing this too. We are going to probably, for the time being, scrap the Patreon idea and just continue to go with Trauma Battle episodes as separate episodes,
yep.
But still on Spotify and wherever else you're getting your podcasts. We've decided that because we don't want to make you pay money yet for this.
Yeah,
we're gonna get better at this, and we're gonna make our product better. And we're gonna have more for you before we, and also more of you before we start asking.
The Patreon will be for when we start oiling ourselves up,
right?
And until then,
for when I start taking pictures of
what?
Never mind.
Mm-hmm.
Too excited.
Edible.
All right, and everybody have a.